Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. While you may not immediately recognize his face, you may recognize Eugene Merman's voice as Gene on Fox's animated series Bob's Burgers.
Do you see a lion or a witch or a wardrobe?
A what?
A lion, a witch, or a wardrobe!
Why are you saying that, Gene?
It's a book!
Oh, right, right. A kid's book, yeah.
Yeah, by Salman Rushdie.
It's not by Salman Rushdie.
Of course it is.
It isn't.
Yes, it is.
I'm not going to talk to you anymore, Gene. I'm in a wall. Go look it up, though.
I just did. It's Salman Rushdie.
Aside from his voiceover work, Eugene Merman had a recurring role in HBO's Flight of the Conchords, played a bumbling Russian mobster on the Adult Swim series Delocated, and is a seasoned stand-up comedian, where his stage work often combines storytelling with a touch of the absurd.
I hit a guy on a bike with a door. Of a car, not like a door I carry around and be like, stop saving the earth. By accident. I opened the door of my cab and it hit this guy and he started screaming at me and he's like, look where you're going, you broke the law. And I'm like, look where you're going. And we're just sort of yelling and I look down and I see a bike lane. And as he's screaming at me, I look at him and I go, sorry, I was wrong. He was so mad. He was like, no big deal. He had to go home and be like, I met this really nice guy who hit me with a door. It just made me want to cut people off in traffic just to apologize and be like, sorry, that was my fault.
And you can see Eugene Merman for yourself this Friday at 3S Art Space in Portsmouth. Eugene Merman, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Now, you've been performing stand-up for about 20 years, and you're just 40 years old. So was comedy a plan from a young age?
It was, yeah. I always sort of loved stand-up, and I think at some point it occurred to me that it was a career that you could do. And so I started doing stand-up, and I did it in college, and then after college, and still today.
Well, it's pretty bold considering your background. I mean, your family emigrated from the U.S. To the U.S. from Moscow in 1978. You were just four. This was, of course, during the Cold War, waning years, but still. The KGB had targeted your parents and tapped your phone. So I'm just curious about how your parents reacted when you said, I'd like to be a comedian.
Well, you know, they were actually incredibly supportive. I think potentially much more so than, you know, other immigrant families might have been. But I think to them, they legitimately wanted to bring my brother and I here to America where we could, you know, do what we want and not be as watched by the government. Watched like a little, but barely.
Do you remember moving to the U.S.? Do you have early memories?
I remember not fitting in, but I don't really remember the move.
Well, what do you mean not fitting in?
I mean, growing up in the 80s during the Cold War, and being from Russia, so people thought I was a spy. Admittedly, those were other third graders, but, you know, it still created hardship.
I can imagine. Do you think that being that outsider, though, may have been what led you to comedy? I mean, you're coping on some level.
I do. I think, like, sort of being, partially an outsider and then also sort of an insider in terms of growing up within the culture, I do think it gave me a sort of interesting perspective. And I think that does, you know, probably affect how I see things and how I see the world and also comedy.
How did your classmates take it? I read something about your first comedy routine in sixth grade. You want to talk
about I don't think that was a comedy routine. I think I just lip sync Bill Cosby's stand up, which is not how you do a book report. And so then I went into special ed.
Really? They put you in special ed for that?
I don't think it was for that. I think that was the catalyst. But I think everything in terms of me being a terrible student and a lot of other stuff was part of it.
Wow. So that must have really cemented, in those terms, in the middle school terms, a kind of weirdo status.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That and being foreign and all of it. I mean, every year it sort of contributed to the next. And it was probably only in high school that things got a little better in that way. But my first actual stand-up was sort of the summer after high school and then once at a talent show in high school.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what you did for a routine then?
A little bit, yeah. I had a joke I think the first joke I ever wrote was, what profession do you think has the highest suicide rate? A lot of people think it's dentists, but it's actually kamikaze pilots.
That's funny.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Delivered even by an incredibly anxious 18-year-old, it was not terrible.
Well, you know, despite your track record with book reports, you did get into Hampshire College and created your own major, which was comedy. How did that work?
Well, Hampshire in general, you create your own major. So the fact that I created comedy is not unusual sort of to the fact that everyone creates their own major. But it worked out great because a lot of people I knew went to liberal arts schools and, majored in history or English or writing or whatever it is that they wanted to do. So I did sort of just an offshoot of that. I just made it much more specific and then did a 1-hour stand-up act that I, wrote and promoted and produced and performed. And I actually learned a lot from that experience. So it was sort of almost like going to an artistic trade school in certain ways.
Wow. So you did stand-up sort of like as your final exam or thesis?
Yeah, I did a 1-hour stand-up show as my at Hampshire, it's called Div 3, but basically as a thesis.
Wow. Well, you later went back to Hampshire as a commencement speaker. This was in 2012. Let's hear just a clip.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor, especially considering I barely got into Hampshire. It was in special ed from 6th to 12th grade. Still, thank you, even though I know some of you were hoping the speaker would be Chairman Mao. He is dead and charges an exorbitant personal appearance fee for a communist.
When you graduated, did you know what kind of comedy you wanted to do?
No. I mean, I ran a comedy show, a weekly comedy show in the basement of my dorm, and I would also go to Boston and New York to do sets. But basically, I would try something on stage, and if it got people to laugh, it would become kind of part of my act. And then if it didn't, I would either, try to change it or get rid of it. And it's almost sort of like a slightly trial and error scientific method, which I guess is how all comedy works. But, I think it just sort of developed naturally as you would perform and then keep what worked and then get rid of what didn't.
We're speaking with the stand-up comedian, comic actor, and founder of the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival, Eugene Merman. He's going to be at 3S Art Space in Portsmouth this Friday. But your career has not followed the typical trajectory of a stand-up comedian. You've done a lot of voiceover work, started the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival, which is going to be in Boston and Cambridge this month. Work with Neil deGrasse Tyson's Star Talk radio show, created a number of petitions to the White House, and this online store, Flotsam. Where do these all come from?
Well, I mean, a lot of it is that I like working on different projects with different friends. It's true that it's very much not a traditional path to stand up or to I guess a career of any kind. But but each thing on its own made sense, and I think a lot of it actually extended from when I was at Hampshire, because to do a 1-hour stand up show for a lot of people, you have to figure out how to get people to show up, and there's so much that you have to do to get there, and that you're just basically constantly problem solving these sort of problems that you're creating. And figuring out how to have it work out. So I think a lot of the different stuff I do is sort of, John Benjamin had this idea for a mystery sack, and then we kind of figured out how to, work with another friend of ours and sort of get a business off the ground.
Well, I highly recommend that listeners go and take a look at Flotsam. We do have a link at our website, wordofmouthradio.org. But Eugene, I can't help thinking that this is beginning to sound like an endorsement for Hampshire College.
I really enjoyed Hampshire. I thought it was great. But so much of the technology and stuff that exists now, when I was in college, the idea of having a video camera was such a luxury, even a computer. And now the idea that you couldn't make a feature film on your own with a telephone is absurd. So things have changed so much, and so much control is in people's own hands, except for now there's so much content that it's extremely hard to sift through and have anyone pay attention. But everything's a solvable problem, I think.
Well, your parents were supportive when you said you wanted to be a comedian. You just talked about how different the road would be for a young comedian. Is it a viable career for young people today between comedy podcasts, the internet, television? Is there a lot more room for weirdos than when you were growing up?
There's much more room for a lot of niche stuff. You know, you can be, if you can figure out how to sell to 100,000 fans, you don't need to be on television, or you don't need anything in particular. But everything is still something you have to figure out. I don't know. I mean, I would never tell anyone, like, it'd be really funny to go, like, don't become a writer. We're all set. Like, who would you ever tell that to? Hopefully not a very good writer. I definitely think if you want to be a comedian, you have to move to probably... You have to do it somewhere for like 5 years and then move to New York or L.A.
Yeah, so not in New Hampshire?
Well, you can be. Well, you can. It just depends. I mean, you can make up probably a popular radio show or podcast or whatever from anywhere. But I think that if you want to be sort of a stand-up, you can then do that and then move back. I know lots of people who moved to New York for 10 years and then, you know, moved to either where they were from or somewhere else.
As long as they have a good airport near them, right?
I think as long as you have a pretty good airport, if you want to do stand-up, yeah.
Well, this is not going to be your first time in New Hampshire when you're at 3S Art Space on Friday. Can you tell us about going to camp, summer camp in New Hampshire?
Camp to Commupog?
I'm really glad you said it.
Yes. It was a camp that I went to as a kid in, I think, East Madison. It was a nice time at a camp. I think I was in the maybe Wolf Clan. I can't remember. Maybe Bear.
I guess it sounds like summer camp.
Yeah, summer camp with maybe a bonfire and some loincloth.
Yes, there's always that sort of pseudo Native American thing at summer camp. What's that about?
I don't know. It's your state.
Well, Eugene Rimmer.
I came from Russia, and then people were like, "Here, put this on and dance around." And I was like, "Okay, I just want to fit in."
Well, I'm so glad you're returning to New Hampshire. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Eugene Merman, he's a writer, stand-up comedian, the voice of Gene on Bob's Burgers, and creator of the Eugene Merman Comedy Festival, which is coming up in Boston from April 17th to 19th. But this weekend, he will be at 3S Art Space in Portsmouth. There are details at wordofmouthradio.org.